This is Night Call. Broadcast live with host Russ Gibb and tonight's guest, Andy Borg, Commander-in-Chief, Veterans of Foreign Wars. Tonight's subject, is Vietnam necessary? You participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Now here's Night Call host, Russ Gibb.
Hello, night people. This is Gibb. Standing by in Superior, Wisconsin, is the Honorable Andy Borg, Commander-in-Chief of the Veterans of Foreign Wars of the United States. Commander Borg just returned from a tour of Vietnam. During World War II, he served as legal officer and judge advocate with the 7th Fleet in the Southwest Pacific. He presently practices law in Wisconsin. Now, if you'd like to ask the commander a question on tonight's topic, is Vietnam necessary, or make a comment about Vietnam, give us a call here at Night Call. Our Night Call operators are on duty, our lines are open, and we invite you to join us here. Our number is area code 313-846-6601. Now remember, you may call from anywhere collect. You may reverse the charges. Please make that call station to station. Our Night Call number, area code 313-846-6601. Tonight's topic is Vietnam necessary. Commander Borg, what was the purpose of your visit to Vietnam?
Well, I had two reasons for going to Vietnam. In our convention in Chicago in August, we unanimously endorsed the administration's policy in Vietnam. So I wanted to go to Vietnam to make certain that our national organization is correct. As you know, the Veterans of Foreign Wars consist of 1,300,000 ex-fighting men. The second reason I went to Vietnam was to assure the boys fighting over there that the great American people, the great majority of the American people, were behind their war effort. And while I was in Vietnam, through the radio, the newspapers of the various divisions located there, over the loudspeaker of the USS Midway, and over the radio, and by personal contact out in the field and in the hospitals, I probably contacted over 100,000 of our troops and soldiers and Marines in Vietnam and assured them that the great majority of the American people appreciated the effort that they were making in Vietnam during the present time.
Andy, you mentioned the fact that one of your purposes in going to Vietnam was the fact that you wanted to find out the correctness of the policy of the United States. How did you find the policy working in Vietnam?
Very, very well. I came back very certain that our organization was correct when it approved the administration's stand in Vietnam.
Why would you say that America is in Vietnam, then?
Well, America is in Vietnam, as you know. Three of our presidents have made a commitment to those people through the Southeast Asia Treaty, which was approved by the United States Senate, and the various assistance programs, and many of the declarations we have made to keep that country free against communist aggression.
What aggression is going on there at this point? Is this the aggression of the North Vietnamese, or are we talking about the Red Chinese?
Well, it's the aggression of the North Vietnamese that's spurred on by Red China to take that country over, which has been going on ever since the Geneva Conference.
What was that Geneva Conference? What were the agreements that they arrived at? Did you get any opportunity to discuss this with any of the Vietnamese officials?
No, I did not discuss the Geneva Conference in essence, but I discussed many of the problems with the Vietnamese people. I talked to two of the generals that are members of the 10-member cabinet that's ruling Vietnam, and I talked to many of the people. I got right down on the street. I went into an orphanage of the where the children of dead Vietnamese soldiers are getting an education. I went into rehabilitation centers. I laid a wreath at the tomb of their unknown soldier. And I got a chance to talk to the people of Vietnam.
Well, now, were these people that you were allowed to pick by yourself, or were they picked for you by the Key government?
No, I picked them myself. The people on the street and the people that I met in the schools and the veterans that I met certainly weren't picked for me by anyone.
General Key came to power via a military takeover, correct?
Right.
Would you consider him a military dictator?
No, I would not. The people seemed to like General Key. I didn't get a chance to talk to him personally. He was ill at the time, but I talked to General Chu and General Thu, who are probably two of his highest advisors and in that 10-general cabinet. But I did not get a chance personally to talk to General Key.
Do you feel that the Vietnamese people, the South Vietnamese, actually are happy with the new regime of General Key, then?
I seem to feel a feeling of optimism in the people of South Vietnam since the Americans have brought their strength over there. It just happened that General Key was in power at the time the Americans brought in their strength, and I think it has given a feeling of optimism to the people of South Vietnam that they hadn't had for a long time. I was also at a dinner where the mayor of Saigon was present, and he sat next to me, and I asked him a great number of questions, and that wasn't any set up for me just to talk to certain people. I don't think anyone knew that he was going to sit next to me.
Well, why is Vietnam necessary, Andy?
Vietnam is very necessary. I've said many times since I've come back that the United States is on trial. Like in a court of law, the world is a jury. We've made commitments to all those people of South Vietnam and people of Southeast Asia that we would not permit a communist takeover. Now, we have a solemn obligation to fulfill that commitment. If we fail in the eyes of the rest of the world, we'll fail again, and I feel that they will never again have confidence in the United States of America. And secondly, I feel that South Vietnam should be taken over by the communists. It's not going to satisfy the appetite of Red China or North Vietnam. It's going to whet that appetite. And they'll continue to move. They'll take over Thailand, all the rest of Southeast Asia, move on to Australia, the Philippines, and instead of avoiding a major war, we'll have World War III, and it'll probably be fought on their terms and closer to our shores.
This is considered...
Satisfy your question?
Yes, I think this is considered the domino theory, is it not?
Yes, part of it.
Now, what about the effect that the demonstrators, the people in the United States that are for ending the Vietnam War... what effect is this having on, A, the South Vietnamese, and B, the American servicemen, and C, the North Vietnamese?
Well, let me take the first part of your question. On the people of South Vietnam, and I talked to many of them, as we lawyers say, it's raising a doubt in their minds that maybe the United States is similar to France. The people at home will get war-weary, and if they get war-weary, they'll pull out of South Vietnam and leave them to the mercy of the North Vietnamese and Red China. And I was asked that question, what was the significance of the marchers, and did they represent American opinion? And I was asked that not only by the leaders of Vietnam, but many of the people on the street, and many of the soldiers of Vietnam that I met, and many civilians. And I assured them that they did not represent the great majority of American people. And I assured them that the United States would keep their commitment. And they had a smile on their face after they talked to me, because I believe they trust the American veteran, the ex-fighting man, we seem to have a common bond. Now, on your second question, on the American boys, I talked to many of them, as I said, in the hospitals, out in the field, on board the ships. Many of them were with us at various times, and they expressed to me in no uncertain terms how they felt about the marchers in some language that I couldn't use over mm-hmm. the air. But let me say this as to the effect on the American fighting man over there. It has not affected his desire to win that war, his love of country. He knows why he is there. He told me what I told you a short time ago, why we were there. And he's a very intelligent, fine young man, and I was very proud of the American fighting man in South Vietnam. Now, on the third phase, third aspect of your question, the most serious harm that the marchers are doing is this. They are giving false hope to the enemy. I was also on the island of Quemoy, and I saw some of the propaganda, and they're using the marchers as propaganda to assert that the Americans, the capitalists, as they call us, the beast, will walk out someday on the people of Southeast Asia, that the Americans cannot be trusted, that the American people are not behind the war effort, and therefore the communists should persist, and if they do persist, if they don't give up, they're going to win. Now, by giving them that attitude, it prolongs the war. We have no chance of any conference with them because they think they're going to win if they stick it out because of the marchers. The marchers are giving them false hope.
Well, now, Mr. Board.
What that's doing...
I'm sorry, go ahead, sir.
Let me finish. What that's doing is prolonging the war, causing undue casualties. It's causing the lives of those fine young boys over there. And if it is doing that, it's doing irreparable harm and should be stopped.
Doesn't it follow, though, that if the Vietnam, or the Viet Minh, rather, the communists in the North, can read about our marchers, that they can also read the Gallup polls, that the overwhelming majority of Americans back our activities in Vietnam? Why would it follow that they would only believe the one side of our press and not believe the other?
Because they only believe what they want of the leaders. They believe what's good for them, and then they feed it out to their people. Their people don't see the Gallup polls. They only see what the leaders want them to see.
And well, now, this has been
They play up those marches.
I see. This has been a criticism of American policy, that we are not being fed all the information that we should have to make a value judgment on our activities in Vietnam. What do you think about that accusation?
I don't quite understand your question. Now, if it's... on the war effort over there, wherever I went, I ran into correspondents, and I had no complaints from any of those correspondents that they weren't getting the news.
They were
out in the field where I was, and they were on board ships, and I have read the news since I came back home, and it certainly sounds logical to me, and I believe that the American people are getting the news from Vietnam.
Why haven't we declared all-out war, then? Is there any reason that you could determine?
Why we don't declare all-out war?
Yes, with the Vietnam situation in Vietnam, I should say.
Well, that certainly would be up to the President and the Congress if we were to declare all-out war.
Would you say we're fighting a war there now?
Well, certainly, any time you have American boys being killed, whatever you call it, it's war.
Well, why won't we declare it?
I don't know. That's up to the President and Congress why we don't officially declare war. I'm certain that they would if they felt that there were advantages to our country.
Our guest tonight is Commander-in-Chief of the Veterans of Foreign Wars of the United States, Commander Andy Borg. Our topic is Vietnam Necessary. You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Well, I can't this Sunday. I'm playing golf, and the following Sunday I promise to take the kids to the beach.
Uh-huh.
Man's got to spend some time with his kids, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Besides, we seem to get along just fine without church. You know, it's up to the individual. Gee, look at the time. I got to run. But anyhow, we'll trot along to church one of these days.
Uh-huh. Well, how about 2 weeks from Sunday?
Oh, I never planned that far ahead. 2 weeks, the whole world could blow up by then.
That's right.
Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by your Council of Churches. This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Our guest tonight is Mr. Andy Borg. He's the Commander-in-Chief of the Veterans of Foreign Wars of the United States. Our topic is Vietnam Necessary. And Commander Borg just returned from Vietnam from a tour. So if you'd like to ask him a question about Vietnam or what reasons we have for being in Vietnam or what the effect of the protests are having on American servicemen in Vietnam, give us a call here at Night Call. Now, it's very easy to call us. You may dial us direct if you wish, and you may make that call collect. You may reverse the charges. Our number is area code 313-84-6601. That number again, area code 313-846-6601. What do you think about Vietnam? Here's your chance to express your opinion coast to coast. Our lines are open, so we invite you to join us here on Night Call. The number again, area code 313-846-6601. Commander Borg, under the Diem regime, Catholicism played a major role in the government of Diem. Does it play an equally important role under the government of General Key?
Well, all the time I was there, I never heard the word religion mentioned, so I can't say.
Do you think that they have religious freedom in South Vietnam, as far as you could determine?
Well, I wasn't on a fact-finding tour, understand me, on that subject, but nowhere did I hear any complaints about religious freedom.
What about the fear of Red China intervention? In other words, actual Red Chinese troops. Did they ever express any fear of Red China to you?
Well, I wasn't only in South Vietnam. I was also in Tokyo, Formosa, the island of Komoi, and Hong Kong, and Thailand. Over in Formosa, I talked to Chiang Kai-shek for 1 hour and a half. And many times that question came up, whether or not Red China would enter the war.
And what did they feel?
Most of the people that I talked to in all those governments and all those countries felt that Red China would not come into the war.
Mr. Borg, I have a caller standing by in Denver, Colorado. A gentleman that's listening on KTLN, Mr. Dave Adams. Good evening, Dave. You're on Night Call. Your comments, sir.
Good evening, Russ. I'd like to give my opinion of why we don't declare war on Vietnam. I'm a serviceman of the Second War, disabled veteran. The only thing I can give is lip service, but I do have strong convictions. My opinion is the reason we don't declare a war is simply because the only way the president declares war is if a foreign nation attacks our country or one of our provinces. That would be considered war. The only thing is with the Geneva Agreement of 54 is that we went to Vietnam to help Vietnam. Vietnam is a country that is very illiterate. The peasants there, the poor people, they live in less than pigsties, and the little villages are controlled by headmasters or headmen of each little village. And as the gentleman just stated, these peasants believe anything that the headman tells them there. And we have more than, our position there is more than to fight a war. Our position there, I think, from what the information I've gathered, our position there is to educate these people, to help them economically, socially, to give them a chance to live like every other human being has a chance to live. I've heard a lot of these marchers against Vietnam policies say, well, the Vietnamese themselves, they are communist sympathizers. Well, you take a person who's hungry and who's sick and who's downtrodden, he will sympathize with anyone who will help him, who will feed and clothe him, whether it be communist or otherwise. And I think that that is what we're doing. Our purpose there is to push the Viet Cong back over across the 17th parallel and be able to set up a government there in South Vietnam so the people will have a chance to be able to escalate themselves up to some type of living without living with the hogs and the chickens and all in the little shacks that they're in. I know our boys there are having a rough time. They have mosquitoes, they have snakes and all kind of things there bothering them at night when they're out on these maneuvers. And this Thanksgiving Day, I'm thankful that we have courageous young men who could come back over to the States. But I saw on TV the other night where they're signing up again because they feel that the job is not done, and they're courageous enough to stay there and suffer these hardships to be able to give these people a decent life, and I'm for them 100%.
Mr. Borg, would you care to comment on Dave's comments?
Well, he's pretty much on the right track. We're certainly doing a lot for those people over there. I was in some of those villages, and we've got staff sergeants that are performing the work of surgeons and helping them medically. I was in villages and talked to the people in these villages. One of the reasons that it's very difficult to get the people back to the villages from Saigon is the terrorism and the brutality of the Viet Cong. They go in there and they cut off the chief's head. And a chief isn't like a chief of the Indians. He's a mayor that's elected, and it's hard to get the government set up in these villages. But that's all part of our program, as the man said. But it all works hand in hand. We have to first give them security so they'll go back into the villages. And once we get them back, then we begin to help them. It's all a program of making South Vietnam a better place in which to live, and he's certainly on the right track.
David, I want to thank you for calling that call.
My final comment is, a lot of people say this can't, we have to compromise with Hanoi and the communists. The only peace that Hanoi and the Viet Cong wants is a piece of the Western hemisphere here, especially America. They want to dominate us. They don't want peace in the sense that we are referring to peace. And if the Berliners can live in coexistence there with the East and the West with a wall between them, I don't see why Vietnam cannot survive if they're divided from North and South. And I think that that is our purpose there. And I want to thank you for allowing me to speak tonight.
Well, David, I want to tell you I was over on in East Berlin, too, on the trip I made. I stood at Checkpoint Charlie there and gave a speech. And you're absolutely correct. They could live in peace over there, one part in North Vietnam and one in South Vietnam.
Right.
But the people in South Vietnam told me the way to end this war is for the aggressors from North Vietnam to go home.
David, thank you for calling NICOR.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, Rod.
Same to you, David. Good night, sir.
Mr. David Adams, a good friend of ours from Denver, Colorado, who's listening on KTLN. And now let's go to Kalamazoo, Michigan, a listener on WFBM FM. Mrs. Young. Good evening, Mrs. Young. You're on Night Call.
Yes.
Your comment, please.
Beg your pardon?
Your comment, please.
Yes. Well, first of all, I think we are getting much better news reporting now than we have. But I've been interested in Vietnam for a good long time. And I remember when Madam New was here to try to explain the situation there, and she was not given a hearing, and she was frozen out by the State Department, the administration, and the press from coast to coast. And I know at that time things weren't what they should be. Then I have a question. I know that Chiang Kai-shek's armies are ready to help in Vietnam. They're eager to do this, and I'd like to know why we can't use them.
Is that question directed to me?
I don't know. Anybody who can answer?
Well, I think it's directed to you, Mr. Borg.
I talked to Chiang Kai-shek, as I said, for an hour and a half, and I talked to all his top officials, the head of his Army and Navy and Marine Corps and the Chief of Defense, and you are correct. They would like to help. Wherever I went on Formosa, when I was interviewed by the newspaper, they asked me what I thought of free Chinese helping. I would like to inform you that there are some Chinese advisors, free Chinese, over there helping. The problem is if we allow the free Chinese to come into South Vietnam, it would probably be an open invitation for the red Chinese to come into the war. And certainly we're not trying to escalate this war. We're attempting to get the North Vietnamese to go home and allow the South Vietnamese to have a free country.
Yes, but China is...
That is the answer.
China is not ready for a big war. And some of the best men are in military men are saying that if we took care of China now, we won't have to face her later. If we don't take care of her now and give her a chance to get stronger and get more nuclear weapons and so forth, that we will face her in the not-too-distant future, and then we're going to have a lot of trouble.
Mrs. Young?
What do you mean by taking care of China now?
Well, I mean if, for instance, it's been suggested that we bomb the installations around Hanoi and all their military equipment.
Well, now that's Vietnam. That's not China.
No, of course not. But if Chiang Kai-shek's army would enter, you say we'd have escalation.
Oh, well, I didn't say that. I said there is that possibility.
Yeah. And because China is not in a position to fight a big war right now, I don't think that that this would happen. The way it is, fighting on the ground the way they do, the more men are killed as far as China's concerned, I mean the Chinese, the better, because they've got too many people anyway, and we'll never have enough men to fight them in the hand-to-hand combat.
Mrs. Young, are you suggesting that human life is not really of value if it happens to be yellowed skin life?
I didn't say that at all.
I was asking if you were suggesting...
The Chinese feel this way. The Chinese don't care how many men are going to be killed. Like someone said, well, they'll fight to the last Vietnamese. Well, they will sacrifice all of these men, and they'll have men left when ours are all gone. This is the thing I'm saying. Yes, I do care. I think every day, I just cringe at all this death from both sides. I can't stand it.
Well, you see, you're answering your own question when you ask about the free Chinese coming into the war. Then it could involve us in a war with Red China.
I think
now we probably should remember the lesson in Korea when they came down.
And also, there's a historical reason why the Chinese have not been asked to join in Vietnam. The last time any Chinese came into Vietnam, it seems to me they stayed for at least 1,000 years. Now, I may be wrong. And there is a fear on the part of the Vietnamese people, both south and north, to have actual Chinese again into their respective countries.
That's right.
Mrs. Young, I want to thank you for calling Night Call, and thank you for your opinion.
Yes, thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Mrs. Young, a lady from Kalamazoo, Michigan, who listens on WFBM.
Our guest tonight is the Commander-in-Chief of the Veterans of Foreign Wars of the United States, Commander Andy Borg. Our topic is Vietnam Necessary. You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Look, I'm quite self-sufficient. I made myself what I am, thank you.
But don't you think all of us occasionally could use a little divine or...
Gee, I gotta run. Here's my card, anyhow. I'm a vice president now.
Well, good.
Yes, indeed.
But your name, it's just penciled in here.
Well, there's a big turnover in personnel. You know how it is.
Uh-huh. Well, that's just about how it is in life, isn't it?
Pardon?
We're all just penciled in.
Where you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be.
Proceeding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church. This is Night Call.
Hang on.
And here is host, Russ Gibb.
Our guest tonight is the Commander-in-Chief of the Veterans of Foreign Wars of the United States, Mr. Andy Borg. Our topic is Vietnam Necessary. And Mr. Borg just returned from Vietnam and actually a tour of that whole area of the world. So if you'd like to ask him a question of Vietnam or make a comment on Vietnam, give us a call here at Night Call. Now, you can call us by dialing area code 313-846-6601. Our lines are open and our operators are on duty, and we invite you to join us here on Night Call and let you express your opinion. Now, the number again is area code 313-846-6601. Now, remember, you may call from anywhere, collect. You may reverse the charges. Now, please, gentle people, make that call station to station. If you get a busy signal, do not become discouraged. Just hang up and dial us again. Area code 313-846-6601. And Mr. Borg, I have a caller standing by in Indianapolis, Indiana now, a listener on WFBM-FM, Mr. Ron Fenner. Good evening, Ron. You're on Night Call, sir. Your comment, please.
Thank you. I think in answer to your question that's been presented this evening, is Vietnam necessary? I would say it, as it has the circumstances leading up to it, I think Vietnam is definitely necessary. I think due to various political blunders that have been brought forth, I think Vietnam is definitely necessary. As far as the strategic area and opening up the entire Pacific to communist advances, the thing that bothers me about the whole idea about Vietnam is this paradox of having a sword in one hand and an olive branch in another. I think in order to really convince the adversary that we're sincere in regaining South Vietnam and setting up a democracy as such in South Vietnam, that we had better get both hands on the weapon. I'm a firm believer in the policy, although I was quite younger then. I'm currently enrolled in college. But I remember a little bit about the Eisenhower-Dulles policy, which they called the brink of war policy, where a line was drawn and we told the communists that if you step across that line, you're going to receive a retaliation from the United States that you've never dreamed of. And four times during the Eisenhower administration, this particular thing came up. Once in Lebanon, once in the offshore islands in Quemoy and Matsu, once in Berlin, and once in the Suez crisis. And not once did the communists or the Soviet Russian or the Chinese communists make any action that they wanted to cross us. I think we put ourselves in a position.
We could also add the Cuban crisis.
In the Cuban crisis.
You remember that one?
Well, this was the Cuban crisis was after the Eisenhower years.
Right, but it's another example of a show of strength when they'll back down.
Yes, but I think we failed in the Cuban crisis by not employing a complete and a complete blockade and really telling the Russians that you'd better get out of there or else we're going to sink that island.
You wanted to go further than President Kennedy went.
Pardon?
You wanted to go further than President Kennedy went.
I think we negotiate ourselves to a crossroads where the enemy misinterprets our intentions and they think by always being willing to sit down to the negotiation table that they can push us around. They have this ace in the hole where, you know, things get going too badly. We can always go to the thing. I think that's the thing that they're thinking about in Vietnam. I think up until now, and things have been going fairly well in the favor of the communists in Vietnam. And
why is that, Ron? Why do you imagine things were going well for the Viet Minh?
I think we're engaged in a struggle that is completely unfamiliar to us. In a jungle type situation, where and particularly in a guerrilla type warfare. I really don't think that all of the other conflicts in the First World War in Korea and in the Second World War.
Well, I want to disagree with you on the Second World War. I think anybody that was over in the Pacific.
Oh, in the Pacific, definitely. Definitely, but by and large now, don't you agree that there's a different group of fighting men in South Vietnam?
Well, now, do you know the difference, Ron, between the Viet Cong and the Viet Minh?
Oh, yes, I do.
Would you tell us the difference?
The Viet Cong are, as I understand it, are the are the communist-oriented citizens of Vietnam.
Now, of Vietnam? Of South Vietnam. These are people who were raised in South Vietnam.
Many of them trained in the North.
And are trained in the North. They're communist.
Then you have the hardcore North Vietnam.
Which is the Viet Minh.
Yes, the Viet Minh are from North, but the communists, but the Viet Cong are the turncoats.
Well, now, what about the argument, Ron, that many of the South Vietnamese officers were trained in the United States of America?
The argument that they were trained
in America and are agents of imperialism, which is the argument that the North Vietnamese use when we give this argument that they have trained their people, you see, and brought them down into the South.
Well, this is This deal of being imperialistic, having imperialistic motives and everything is certainly
communist propaganda.
Certainly a smokescreen thrown up by the communists.
Let me comment a little bit about the war in South Vietnam. The type of war it is. We talked to many of the officers, many of the enlisted men, and I was traveling with a general, General Kittle, who was the former general in the Marines, and asked many military questions. And he asked one of the generals, he said, "It's like the Indian War, isn't it?" He said, "Some parts of it's like the Indian War, and some parts of it's a war that's never been fought before." We talked to one commanding general in NK, and he said, "Look out here at this airstrip," he said, "all these civilians that we need to build it." He said, "I have no doubt that one-third of those people are shooting at us at night." And so it is a different war, as Ron says. It's a different war than it's ever been fought.
but I believe that we're getting it under control. I left there with a great deal of confidence. In the First Corps, we have the Marines branching out. In the Second Corps, we have the 1st Cav and the 15,000 South Koreans. Down in 3 and 4, we have the 1st Division, the Big Red Division. I was at Ben Cap. And they told me that the theory was to drop these different groups within a group and spread out. And one of the generals there, one of the finest men that I ever met, General Ellis Williamson of the 173rd Airborne Brigade that's been in every skirmish out there. It's like a fire department. When they need them, they fly in and assist. And if you watch the newspapers, you can tell what they're doing out there. He told me that the greatest evidence that we were winning the war is that the South Vietnamese people are giving them intelligence. He said, in order to win this war, we have to know where the Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese are. And one of the greatest pieces of information that we got was from a Vietnamese woman. Now, when we get that information, we're going to be able to dig them out, we're going to clean them out, and we're going to reduce them to bandits. And I said, he's a real fighting man. And he said that, to him, was the greatest indication that the war was going well, because we're getting better intelligence, and with better intelligence, we can complete the job. Does that give you any information?
Yes. One more comment, then I'd like to ask you another question.
All right.
Well, Ron, we have other callers waiting. And...
just really quick. I'll be really quick about this. Another thing that this makes this war different is that it's a political situation also, as well as a military conflict. And that's been something different, I think, according to the history of the past war.
Yes, it is a different kind of a war, as has been said many times. Has no rear, has no front, has no flanks. But let me give you just one more comment that'll make you feel good. One of the real fighting men said to me, he said, we control the sea, we control the skies, and we're beginning to control the night. And when we do control the night, we're well on our road to victory.
Right. How much do you see? Did you see in Vietnam of the governments of our government's 100% willingness to win the war? It seems as though from what we've been.
I thought 101% of South Vietnam. What I'm worried about here is the home front. That's what you and I have to bolster up. Those boys will take care of South Vietnam. Let's just give them the support here, and they'll finish the job and come back.
That's great. That's the best news that I've heard in a long time.
Okay.
Mr. Fenner, I want to thank you for calling that call.
Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Thank you, sir. Mr. Ron Fenner, a gentleman from Indianapolis, Indiana, a student listening on WFBM. Our guest tonight is the Commander-in-Chief
of the Veterans of Foreign Wars of the United States, Mr. Andy Borg, and Commander Borg just returned from Vietnam. You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Busy America, busy making money, busy buying gadgets, busy keeping up with you-know-who.
Is that your idea of fulfillment?
Don't you wonder if there's more to life than just that rat race with no finish line? Where do you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by your Council of Churches. This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Okay, hang on. Our guest tonight is the Commander-in-Chief of the Veterans of Foreign Wars of the United States, Mr. Andy Borg. Our topic is Vietnam Necessary. Now, if you'd like to join us here at Night Call, give us a buzz at area code 313-846-6601. And remember, you may call from anywhere collect. Now, please make that call station to station. Our Night Call number, area code 313-846-6601. And let's see, we have a caller standing by in Bloomington, Indiana, a listener on WFBM, Miss Fern Goodman. Good evening, Fern. You're on Night Call, ma'am.
Good evening. Last week we had a speaker here on campus. I thought I understood to say that we do not declare war on Vietnam because there are treaties which North Vietnam may have made secretly or openly, which if we declared war would make other countries obligated to enter against the United States. Into the war against us.
I see.
But if we do not call it war, then the pacts are not binding. That's what I understood him to say. I wouldn't want to quote him directly because maybe I misunderstood.
I see. Basically, this you're telling us why we haven't declared the war then.
Yes.
That's probably, she's saying that probably Russia and China would be obligated to come in.
Yes, and of course, if we did, now wouldn't this bring our allies in the CETO compact into the war too then? I think South Vietnam is a signatory to that agreement, isn't it?
I believe it is.
Fern, any other comments that you have?
Yeah, I have one more question. I read a newspaper article about a group of Americans who were in North Vietnam doing similar work to that of the Peace Corps, only in North Vietnam. Do you know the name of this group?
I don't know of any Americans that are working in North Vietnam.
Nor do I. Maybe some of our listeners do, Fern.
Okay, they said that there was the only group in North Vietnam of Americans where they broadcasted on the radio not to harm these Americans because they were helping the people rebuild their villages and that they were not the enemy. And I was just wondering which group this could be.
Never heard of it, but I wouldn't say there wasn't, but except it's something new to me.
Well, Fern, I want to thank you for calling Night Call and thank you for your comments.
You're very welcome.
Miss Fern Goodman, a gal from Bloomington, Indiana, a student at Indiana University, listening on WFBM. And now let's go out to Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLN, Mr. John Hackett. Good evening, John. You're on Night Call, sir.
Good evening. Andy, is it Andy Borg?
Yes.
Right. How are you?
Well, I'm fine.
Mr. Borg, we speak of commitment so often here. Did the United States have a commitment to fight a losing war or a winning war in Vietnam? And I'm afraid that we find ourselves in an awkward position of fighting a controlled war where the president escalates it or slows it down at will, all to the expense of the American men who are over there now. What I would like to know is this. Who is so foolish as to believe that we could not win that war at will if we so desired? And if we can't, then we are in a pretty poor shape militarily. And I say, God save us from China and Russia if we can't march through a country that is only 55 miles wide in spots. And if we cannot go all out for some reason or another, then why, in the name of goodness, did we ever go in there at all? Is there a principle involved here? If so, then we should go all out. If there is not a principle involved here, then we should pull out. Are we accomplishing anything fighting a stalling war for the Vietnamese, or for ourselves, or for freedom, or for what? If we could ever negotiate, why haven't we? Do we really want freedom, or just our terms?
Well, there's several good questions.
It's the first time in history that we go into a war with our hands tied.
Well, let me, you've answered a number of questions. Let me take them one at a time. Number one is we are in there for a principle because we have given a commitment to help those people resist the communists from taking them over. Secondly, we can win that war, and we are winning it. Your comment that we could march through it isn't the type of war that's necessary to win over there. The type of war is the type of war that I outlined of getting the strength in each one of these four corps and then spreading out and finding the enemy and destroying them, and that's what we're doing, and you've read about it in the paper in the last few days.
Now, about the sanctuary war, we had a sanctuary war in Korea, and let me say, many of the boys over there don't believe in the sanctuary war. They would like to see the bombing stepped up in North Vietnam, especially on the port there where the spies are coming in.
Then why not go all out?
Well, by all out, what do you mean?
I mean that if there's a principle involved, that we as American people should stand up on our feet and say there is a principle here. We're fighting for a principle and for nothing else. And that if it is worth fighting at all, it is worth doing it right.
I think we are going all out. We have 150,000 troops in there, and I saw them wonderful troops, and 15,000 from Korea. The Australians and New Zealands are in there. The war is getting more tense, and it is getting an all-out war. The only thing that we're not doing that many people advocate, and including the General LeMay, is more intensive bombing in the north. But he didn't advocate either destroying innocent people up there. He advocated destroying airfields and planes and the port of Haiphong, as I remember it.
Well, innocent people will be destroyed in any war, whether it's a controlled war or uncontrolled.
Would you propose to drop a bomb on a city where there isn't any military advantage?
We did it in Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Well, would you advocate doing it again?
Well, were we wrong then, or weren't we?
Well, I'm asking you, would you advocate dropping a bomb just on a city for the sake of killing a lot of innocent people?
Well, I'm not the president, but if the president is driving this thing from the caboose, then I say he should have known that we're going to have to negotiate this when he started it, and instead of negotiating on the last end of it, we should have negotiated first.
Well, keep
and
in mind
our terms that we want to impose upon the world.
Well, let me make this point. You probably know the Veterans of Foreign Wars. It's a group of men that fought in all the wars. It's very nonpartisan. We criticize the president in many respects, and we also agree with him when we think he's right. We believe he's right in his policy in South Vietnam, and we're supporting him.
But
we believe that we must win there. Now, the only argument you and I are having is how far we should escalate this war. Isn't that about it?
Well, I think that's the question that is in the president's mind, and I think it is a terrible debacle on American justice, and it's an affront to American intelligence.
Well, speaking very much as a nonpartisan, there's one thing that the head of our government has to keep in mind at all times, and that's the atomic bomb, and to keep us out of it, an atomic war, and at the same time show these communists in this type of a limited war that their aggression will and cannot pay off.
Well,
now, would you advocate getting us into atomic war with Russia, where about 100 million people of the United States would be killed in a few hours?
Well, could I ask just one more question?
Sure.
If it came down to a finish, and we were with our backs against the wall, would the principle that you speak of against the atomic bomb, the usage of it, still hold, or would you use the atomic bomb? I mean, are we going to use it, or aren't we? Is this idea of ours in saying we're not going to use it now, is that just relative in right as to right or wrong?
Or well, I hope that you and I never have to go through an atomic war, because I've been briefed on what it would mean to this country and to all the world.
But you didn't answer my question.
Yes, I am answering it. Someday, I don't know. I'm not the great foreseer that someday there may be an atomic war. But I believe that we're winning this war in South Vietnam, and we can do it without the atomic weapons.
Mr. Hackett, I have other callers. I want to thank you for your comments.
Thank you, sir.
Real nice to talk to you.
Thank you, Mr. Board.
Mr. John Hackett, a gentleman from Denver, Colorado, who was concerned about our stance in Vietnam as to whether or not we want to go all out or only halfway in the war. Let's go out to Boise, Iowa now, a listener who is listening, I believe, on, well, let's see, we'll have to check what station this gentleman is listening on, Mr. George Springle. Good evening, George. You're on night call.
Comment,
please.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on this broadcast. We've caught it several times from the Montana station. We reside here in Boise, Idaho.
I see, sir.
My question is, if the commander could give us, being a military man, a little clear objective of what our, or a clear statement of what our objectives really are in Vietnam, other than what's been related to us by our politicians. And number two, could you describe just a little bit more in lay language what the Viet Cong is?
There are two questions for you, Commander Borg.
The Viet Cong are the South Vietnamese people. They call them the Liberation Front that are attempting to change the form of government over there. They're really what we call the communists.
Well, they are part of the Hanoi regime then, down in South Vietnam?
No, they're more of the South Vietnamese people. Many of them have been trained up in North Vietnam.
Uh-huh.
You see, there are two different groups fighting us, sir, the Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese, and you have to keep them separate.
Uh-huh.
Now,
well, on my other question, let me clarify. The United States is so big that they could do to Hanoi what Cassius Clay did to Liston, and we could do it overnight if we wanted to. Why aren't we just sort of moving along, toe-tapping as it went?
You want my own personal opinion?
Well,
I think at all times our leaders have to keep in mind the threat of a nuclear war. And I think we're attempting to settle this problem over there without getting into a nuclear war with Russia. And many of our decisions are based upon the fact that Russia also has the nuclear weapons. Russia is communist, and if we declared war, as a girl pointed out a short time ago, Russia and China probably are under obligation to come to the assistance of North Vietnam. We're attempting to show the communists that they cannot take over a free, innocent country. We're attempting to do it without getting into a nuclear war. And I believe that is the thinking behind the administration. Now, I'm not one of the planners.
No.
I'm just one of the outsiders like you. But
right.
If I were the leader, it's a very difficult job that the president has. It's very easy for us to sit in the grandstand and call the plays and second-guess the coach on the field. But he has a very difficult job over there in South Vietnam that he inherited. And it's not easy to win that war, and at the same time, he's got to, at one corner of his eye, keep in mind Russia and China. Do you follow me?
I do, but I don't agree.
Well,
maybe you don't either.
Well, many of the people recently, just in recent days, have advocated stepping up the bombing in North Vietnam, especially airfields and that port.
Yeah.
And I, for one, believe that it should be very seriously considered.
Well, I'd go along with that.
Well, gentlemen, our time's just about up on night call. Mr. Springle, I want to thank you for calling night call.
Real nice to talk to you.
Thank you, Commander.
Mr. George Springle, gentleman from Boise, Iowa. Commander Borg of the Veterans of Foreign Wars, I want to thank you for being our guest on Night Call. We certainly enjoyed having you and having your comments.
Well, it's been a real pleasure, and let me compliment you on your wonderful program. I think it's real fine for the country to air this problem and air it in a very democratic way.
Thank you, sir.
And, I believe you're doing a great service for the country.
Next Tuesday night on Night Call, our guest will be Senator Daniel Brewster of Maryland. Our topic, what is the war doing to the people of Vietnam? Tomorrow night on Night Call, our guest, Mr. Clark Molyneux, and he's the Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter and author. Our topic, are union leaders untouchable? Until then, this is Gibb wishing you good luck and Godspeed.
Night Call is produced by the Methodist Church in cooperation with the National Council of Churches and this radio station. As a radio forum dedicated to the frank discussion of vital issues of daily life. Night Call encourages its participants to express freely and responsibly their own personal opinions.